Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's acknowledge. Let's do some little positivity here. Acknowledge some big performances from over the weekend. We need the music there, Jordan. There we go. All right, so the way this works, if you listen on Mondays, you know, we acknowledge big performances or things we liked from over the weekend. Sometimes we acknowledge long-term performance in retirement. That'll happen in this segment right here. But I read a name. Jordan, who's producing today, plays...
Acknowledge me!
And we acknowledge why we are acknowledging these people. Let's start with Saquon Barkley.
Acknowledge me!
We acknowledge Saquon Barkley, Seth, for becoming the ninth running back in NFL history to go over 2,000 yards in a season. He is 105 yards away from Eric Dickerson's single-season record. We will acknowledge as well that it's a 17-game season now, not a 16-game season like it was with Eric Dickerson back in the day. But it's fair to say that the Saquon Barkley acquisition is working out as well as the Eagles possibly could have imagined and as poorly as the New York Giants possibly could have imagined.
Yeah, the one thing that John Mara didn't want to have happen, but his GM kept telling him it has to happen for so many good reasons. Because most of all, let's be real, Saquon Barkley is washed up.
Yeah,
he's 27 years old. What could you expect to get out of him?
Why would you pay?
And who's going to want him?
Right.
He also said that multiple times. Who's going to want him anyway?
Right, we can't trade him.
Turns out
the Eagles wanted him. Why would you pay for that? I believe one of the other quotes uttered. We're going to hear some of the audio here in a second. One of the other quotes uttered by Joe Shane: do I want to pay $40 million to my quarterback to hand off to a $12 million running back?
Right.
I'll point out that $40 million quarterback is a Minnesota Viking now. He's not even on the Giants anymore. He's not even a Giant. Here's probably the most noteworthy exchange between Giants GM Joe Shane. This is from Hard Knocks offseason. Giants GM Joe Shane and owner of the Giants and probably the biggest Saquon Barkley fan in the world, John Mara.
What's the latest? Just on the Saquon thing.
I just got a text that Chicago's driving the price up and Philly's out. I don't know if that's true or not.
Liar.
Which I don't know if I'll make a couple calls. I don't even know if that's gonna happen, but
I'd have a tough time sleeping if Saquon goes to Philadelphia. I'll tell you that. As I've told you, just being out. I have been around enough players. But he's the most popular player we have by far.
Yeah.
Joe Shane didn't want to hear about popularity. that was not registering. That was not, dude. The more we play that cut, the more Joe Shane in the very beginning sounds like a guy who is totally lying and doesn't even. He just thinks like this old man's going to believe me. He'll believe me.
I'll tell you, man. Just that right there, there's so many moments from that Hard Knocks where these are conversations that would have been had. We just wouldn't have been privy to them.
Right.
So, like, let's pretend that this was never on HBO Hard Knocks, but these were the conversations that Joe Shane is having with John Mara, where he's just continually, over the course of that HBO Hard Knocks offseason, kind of pulling the wool over John Mara's eyes about the situation. And Joe Shane is repeatedly telling people on his own staff, no, nobody's going to want him. Why would Philly want Saquon Barkley? No, they're not going to go after him. So, like, he was so wrong in so many respects, which happens, except that you also get a sense that, man, it felt like he was actively misleading him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, actively 100%. Misleading John Mara.
100%.
And not to mention, but then not even misleading it, saying, we've got to find out what we have in Daniel Jones, the guy that I paid without apparently knowing what we have in him.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's gone, which is what's so crazy about these reports that Joe Shane's job is safe.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
It's crazy.
Somebody's got to grab John Mara by his little fancy lad prep school blazer and say he is making a fool of you, John Mara.
You can act like a man.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's keep it moving. Coach Prime.
Acknowledge me.
I'm going to acknowledge Coach Prime, not for the abysmal performance that Colorado put up in the Alamo Bowl. BYU just took them to the woodshed. And that was with Shador playing quarterback and Travis Hunter playing wide receiver and cornerback. Colorado's guys played in this game. And I will partial portion of my acknowledgement is to Coach Prime for having his guys play in the bowl game. I think that's really cool. Now, they played like they were out a lot on the Riverwalk over the last few days. They were not good. This is what has me acknowledging Coach Prime, and this is where I've started. I've really come around on him this year as a coach and a leader of young kids, you know, young men, I should say. This was Coach Prime giving his opinion on something he thinks should be mandatory for college football play, college athletes.
I think financial literacy classes should be mandatory so these kids understand how to manage their money when they get their money, and I think it should be a pay scale. It should be structured. It can't be just Tom, Dick, and Harry gets this because he had a great year somewhere else. Then that throws off the chemistry and the structure of your whole team. It's just like one of you guys coming out here and some guys from outside come in here and they make more money than you and they hadn't even been doing the work that you've done. It's not fair. And I think the NFL has handled it right, and we need to mimic the NFL when it comes to that, because right now we're not pros, but we're semi-pro. And that's the way it's going. And if we don't get a hold of it, it's going to keep going left. And the teams that don't have the budgets like us, it's going to be hard to sit up here in front of you and then make it to a playoff game, because now it turns into pay-per-view.
That's good. We're good, Jordan. That's right. That's good right there. The last about 30 seconds of that, he's basically saying that college needs a salary cap like the NFL. Like, all teams need to be playing.
Oh, that's
on,
what he says.
Even
the,
playing
he goes on to say that. Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
I felt like that's what he was implying by saying the pros got it right. Now we need to mimic the pros.
Oh, I thought he meant in terms of the literacy classes and everything. Because there's all kinds of stuff in the off season about educational stuff like that.
Oh, everything. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Probably. Maybe that too.
I mean, given what he was talking about, that's what I assumed he was saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just, it's the Wild West right now in college. And yeah, I mean, from program to program, who knows? Like, how many of those guys even realize that they've got to hold, you know, they've got to pay self-employment tax and all that, and it's a lot. It's hard enough when you actually get a real job with an employer, you know, to manage your taxes.
Yeah.
But, like, you're all of a sudden making all that money as an independent contractor with all this NIL stuff, and it's a lot. But then the part that I was intrigued by was when he was talking about the jealousy and everything. Like, that's almost like a financial literacy and philosophy class in one.
Yeah.
Just, you know, understanding and not comparing yourself to others and keeping your eyes on the, it would be very tailored to professional athletes.
I think financial literacy courses should be mandatory in college, period, for every student. I think like that, there's always mandatory. I had to take two theology courses at Notre Dame. Yeah. I had to take PE my freshman year.
Look at how fit and pious you are now because of it.
Right. I never had to at any point. I mean, I was a finance major, but there were no mandatory financial classes. You know,
it is like, funny. Yeah, I think like you can take any number of macro and microeconomics classes, but still not be good about managing your own personal.
Yeah,
finances.
I think it should. Yeah. I think the syllabus should be totally putting the student in the shoes of this is their money, not this is the economy, you know?
Like, we had, I remember when we were in school, at some point, you know, they had home economics and you had shop class. And they changed it to where they were like, all right, like, listen, times are changing. And I'm guessing a lot of these young women in the 1980s aren't going to go on to be housewives. I think we called it home and careers. So it was like, we could still take shop or tech ed, whatever they called it. But there was a separate one that was home and careers, which was everybody took it and you had to learn how to do all the old home economic stuff like cooking and everything. But then there was also balancing your checkbook. There was a financial management side to it.
Yeah.
But it was in like seventh or eighth grade.
Right.
So where it's not quite getting to the point where, you don't have your own checkbook at that point usually. That's at the very, like, your junior or senior year in high school is probably the best time to do that.
Yeah. So Coach Prime, good job on your philosophy. Bad job in the Alamo Bowl. Good job with what you're espousing. Jonathan Fagan. Hey, Jordan. Jonathan Fagan.
Acknowledge me.
We acknowledge Jonathan Fagan. Jonathan Fagan, Rockets beat writer for the Houston Chronicle, hanging it up after 27 years of covering the Rockets, and even longer than that with the Chronicle, I can remember when I moved here in like 1994, 1995, and Jonathan Fagan was doing periodic radio over on one of Dan Patrick's stations, I think with Matt Thomas back in the day. So he's been doing it in Houston even longer than the several, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, even longer than the 27 years he's been covering the team. But man, you can tell a lot, Seth, about the respect level by the way the team that a person covers handles their retirement. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan Fagan got an ad in the, a full page ad in the Chronicle from the Rockets. Ime Udoka tossed a ball, a basketball, to Jonathan Fagan in the postgame press conference. Yeah. After they blew that lead to the Timberwolves on Friday. That was Fagan's last game, I believe. And they honored him last night at the Heat game. You know, center court gave him, you know, I don't recall what they gave him, but they acknowledged him at the game right there at center court. I don't know, Jonathan, really. I probably did a few of those like panel shows with him along the way on TV. You know, you and I have done enough TV. I don't know that he's ever been part of the 610 family here, at least not while I've been here. I always enjoyed reading his stuff. He was excellent. You couldn't ask for anybody better at covering your local basketball team.
No, and I like, honestly, the simplest thing is what I've always appreciated him the most for is just the game recaps. Like, I feel like he did a really good job of just laying it out exactly what the pertinent issues were, without hopping around all over the place. A lot of these young writers are so enamored of all the stats and everything that it turns out it feels like you're reading an advanced box score the whole time. They then throw in a couple of transitions too and call it an article. Like, Fagan would write actual articles every night. And you'd feel like, oh yeah, that was the most important thing in this game. Yeah. Or that was the critical moment in this game. Yes. Thank you, John.
Usable yeah, for guys. Yeah. Usable for guys like us, especially guys like us if it was a West Coast game. And we didn't see the whole thing. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah. Like his recaps were awesome. So congrats to Jonathan Fagan, who it sounds like is gonna do a lot of traveling in retirement from everything that I've read. He had a really good kind of like final piece that he wrote thanking everybody. If you're a fan of Jonathan Fagan or you're a fan of the Rockets, go out of your way to find it. It was really, really good. Congratulations to him on a great career in an industry where it is really hard to go out on your own terms. And he's going out on his own terms. So good for him.
He should have thrown the ball back to Udoka, like he's checking the ball.
In the press.
Yeah. Just rifle it back at him aggressively.
If they'd won that game, then maybe. Like, blew a 16-point lead. Greg Gumbel.
Acknowledge me.
R.I.P. Greg Gumbel passes away over the weekend. If you're a sports fan at all in town, you know Greg Gumbel because it feels like he called 100 Texans games over the last several years. Passes away in his late 70s. Cancer. He'd been suffering from cancer over the last several months, year or two maybe. He'd been off the air for a while. I would say, Seth, synonymous with March Madness, that's probably the thing he's most known for, is hosting that studio show with whoever through the years. But the last few years, it's been Kenny Smith, Charles Barkley, Clark Kellogg. Obviously a big part of the NFL coverage. He was part of the nearly original group at SportsCenter back in the day, in the 80s. That's where I graduated high school with his daughter, you know, because he worked in Bristol.
That's right,
he worked in Bristol, Connecticut, so they lived in my town. So Michelle Gumbel is a classmate of mine. Probably best known in Houston, or maybe not best known, but if as far as like Houston calls go that are iconic, Greg Gumbel on the Kiss of Death in 1995.
LA out of the corner for three. Hit it! Mario LA with a three with 7.1 seconds to play.
And look at him talk to the Phoenix bench. How wide open was Akeem Olajuwon on the play, though?
Mario Elie. Is that the stake through the heart for a second straight season by the Houston Rockets?
There you go. Kiss of death, man. I would say one of the three or four most famous plays in the history of this city, the Mario Elie kiss of death. And Greg Gumbel was the one on the call for that one.
And also, Jimmy Carter passed away yesterday as well.
Let's acknowledge Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter.
Acknowledge me. 100.
He made it to triple digits, right? He was a hundo.
Yeah, he was in rough shape the last few years.
Yes. Always,
you know, when people have Alzheimer's. He's just from a personal standpoint, he was the first president that I was ever aware of that was a president. Because I was That was 5 years old in 1980. So I was like old enough to know who the president was and that there was going to be a new president. That was all I knew.
I
don't know who the hell Gerald Ford was.
I was
an infant when he was. Gerald Ford was the first president you were like consciously aware of.
Consciously aware of. I mean, I remember my parents, like when I was real little, saying stuff about Nixon resigning, like, but I didn't really gather what that was all about.
Yeah,
like Gerald Ford was we elect these officials when they don't resign.
I knew my grandparents. My grandparents were the most political people I knew. So all I knew of Jimmy Carter was that I was not supposed to like Jimmy Carter, which is, hey, that's politics, baby.
That's politics. It is politics.